Welcome to Through the Word, leading you on a journey through the entire Bible, one chapter at a time. Today, Peyton Jones guides us through the Old Testament book of Leviticus. Now to Pastor Peyton.
Leviticus chapter 24 today on Through the Word. Chapter 24 is divided up into three sections. The first three have to do with the Trinity, believe it or not, the Father, Son, and the Holy Spirit. And the fourth section has to do with retribution and justice. Make no mistake, at the cross during justice and retribution, where God made all things right, all members of the Trinity were involved. Let's get into the chapter and start seeing the Trinity unfold itself before our eyes. Verses 1 through 4 are about the oil in the lamps. Verse 2 says, "Command the people of Israel to bring the pure oil from beaten olives for the lamp, that a light may be kept burning regularly. Outside the veil of the testimony in the tent of meeting, Aaron shall arrange it from evening to morning before the Lord regularly. It shall be a statute forever throughout your generations. He shall arrange the lamps on the lampstand of pure gold before the Lord regularly." Some of you have heard of the Feast of Hanukkah, which is a celebration of the time in which there was no more oil to keep the flame burning in the temple, and yet miraculously, it burned. This was during the 400-year silent period, and God demonstrated his presence with his people. And because of that, they still remember and celebrate today. The Holy Spirit is our comforter or helper, the one who comes alongside to help, who reminds us that we are never forsaken. As Jesus said, "When I go, I will send the comforter. I will not leave you as orphans." In other words, I will not leave you alone. Verse 5 through 9 is about the bread, which we know is a symbol of Jesus, who said, "I am the bread come from heaven." He is the sustenance that the Father provided for us in the wilderness of sin. In other words, Jesus says, "Eat my flesh and drink my blood that you may live forever." Here, the ingredients and the arrangement on the table, two rows of six, are spelled out in these verses so that they know exactly what God is communicating and what he wants them to know, namely that he provides for his people, all 12 tribes. Verse 7 tells us, "And you shall put pure frankincense on each pile, that it may go with the bread as a memorial portion, as a food offering to the Lord." You remember that Jesus, both at his birth and his death, was given frankincense, or costly perfume, both to anoint him at his birth and at his burial, because his whole life was a fragrant offering to God, a pleasing aroma to the Lord. He was the sacrifice, the one that God had provided that we might feast upon and live by. Uh-oh, somebody's about to get jacked up in verse 10. So far we've seen the Holy Spirit. So far we've seen the Son. Now we're going to see the Father, and it starts with a narrative where a woman's son blasphemes against the Lord. I don't even want to pretend to say what he says, but we've all probably said things about God we shouldn't have. And here a young man becomes the test sample of what happens when you do it. Verse 10 tells us, "Now an Israelite woman's son, whose father was an Egyptian, went out among the people of Israel. And all the Israelite woman's son and a man of Israel fought in the camp, and the Israelite woman's son blasphemed the name of the Lord and cursed. Then they brought him to Moses. His mother's name was Shimleth, and the daughter of Debri of the tribes of Dan. And they put him in custody till the will of the Lord should be clear to them. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, 'Bring out of the camp the one who cursed, and let all who heard him lay their hands on his head, and let all the congregation stone him, and speak to the people of Israel, saying, whoever curses his God shall bear his sin. Whoever blasphemes the name of the Lord shall surely be put to death. All the congregation shall stone him. The sojourner as well as the native, when he blasphemes the name, shall be put to death.'" Remember, God's name was his reputation. And here God is saying, "My name is holy. I am unlike anyone else, and you should revere me, fear me, and love me." By today's standard, especially a rebellious society like ours, we find it difficult to imagine that God actually meant business when he talked about not using his name in vain. But I dare you, go stand in front of the president sometime and stick your middle finger up in front of his face and yell obscenities at him. You'll learn very fast just how quick the reflexes are of the Secret Service. Trust me. God leaves off from this section in verse 17 talking about justice and retribution. And he mentions an eye for an eye, which normally means tit for tat, or if I take your eye, you get to take my eye. But here we see someone's crime of blaspheming the name of the Lord as equivalent to death, showing us what a great crime blasphemy actually is. We might have our standards and our weights and measures. We might have our own value system, but God knows what an offense it is to offend Him. Maybe we should listen. Years ago, Charles Colson told a story in a book called Who Switched the Price Tags? At the opening of the book, there are two thieves that break into a department store. They pulled off one of the greatest heists in history, and yet the funny thing is they never lifted a thing out of the store. What they did is they actually switched the price tag or changed the values of everything that was found within the department store. So the next morning, when the doors opened at 9 a.m., the criminals walked in and simply bought things like cameras, televisions, stereos, for about $1.99 apiece. Meanwhile, all of the costly stickers have been put on little things like post-it notes and pencils. That's exactly what our society has done with the things of the Lord, and therefore God spells out in His law what He thinks is important and not important. You may remember that Jesus said that the unforgivable sin is blasphemy against the Holy Spirit, and He points out that you may be forgiven for blaspheming the Father and for blaspheming the Son, but He says whoever blasphemes the Holy Spirit will not be forgiven. After all, if I blaspheme the Father, I have Jesus to save me. If I blaspheme the Son, the Holy Spirit can still reach me. But the Pharisees, when Jesus said this to them, actually had just seen a miracle, knew it was God, and decided to blaspheme the Holy Spirit to give them an excuse not to believe. Therefore, Jesus said, if your heart is so hard that you would blaspheme the Holy Spirit, you are beyond redemption. Like Charles Spurgeon said, if you've ever worried that you've blasphemed the Holy Spirit, your very worry alone is probably proof that you haven't. People who have blasphemed the Spirit have such hard hearts, they don't even care. All of this talk at the end of the chapter about justice and retribution makes us so much gladder for Jesus. It's against the backdrop of justice that we truly understand and appreciate grace. At the very end of the chapter, we're told in verse 23, so Moses spoke to the people of Israel, and they brought out of the camp the one who had cursed and stoned him with stones. Thus the people of Israel did all that the Lord commanded Moses. Read Leviticus chapter 24 today, and as you do, hear the music behind you of the baritone of justice and how beautiful the symphony of grace is played with that background noise. Trust me, you will appreciate the masterpiece like never before when you see what God has conducted through Jesus, the cross, and grace. The Father gave His Son willingly died for you, and the Holy Spirit brought it into your heart so that you would receive it and rejoice in what Christ had done for you by faith.
Join us next time on Through the Word as we continue the journey, one chapter at a time. And remember, faith comes by hearing, and hearing through the Word.